Hello, and welcome to the Employee Safety Podcast from Alert Media, where you'll hear advice from experienced industry leaders on how to protect your people and business. I'm Peter Steinfeld. Kai Kohler is the Business Continuity Manager at Dimensional Fund Advisors, a global investment firm. Before taking on this role, Kai spent more than a decade helping organizations like Deloitte and the World Bank plan for and recover from major crises. Today, he shares incident recovery strategies, how effective communication and alignment make all the difference, and the lessons he's learned from leading teams through high-stress situations. Here's our conversation. Hey, Kai, thanks so much for being here.
That's my pleasure, Peter. Thanks for having me.
So you've worked across global security, crisis management, and consulting, and now you're focused on business continuity. That offers a really broad perspective. So how have those experiences shaped the way that you approach continuity and incident recovery today?
I started out in the Global Security Watch Office at the World Bank, monitoring more than 168 locations at the time. We had 11 buildings just west of the White House in DC, and of course our people who could be traveling to, you know, anywhere in the globe at any point in time. I was able to help respond to all different types of events. Terrorist attacks, cyclones in Asia, our annual joint meetings with the International Monetary Fund in DC and other locations around the world, things like the Haiti earthquake, the Arab Spring resulting in evacuations. You know, growing up, I always wanted to help people in high-stress environments, and the role taught me a lot about human nature and really how to take care of people. I pretty quickly realized that the pain and struggling did not end after an event subsides. And I found a love for business continuity, which today falls under, you know, that umbrella of resilience, along with crisis management, incident management, IT disaster recovery, third-party risk management, et cetera. You mentioned consulting. I was fortunate enough to work for one of the Big Four accounting firms for about a decade. And the challenges that our clients came to us with gave me opportunities to learn different industries, different business models, different response best practices. I mean, different priorities for recovery, and most of all, the importance of the tone at the top from company leadership. It could be the CEO or a chairman of a national pizza company making a racist comment on a marketing call, or a candy company getting ransomware 2 weeks before Halloween, or train derailments with hazmat releases, or the largest social media company in the world and the challenges that come with that business. But things like duty of care, public relations, leadership, and self-care were all things that I've learned along the way that are really important and things I'm thankful for my time in consulting. You know, I'd end with the amount of PTSD incurred by some of those involved in managing these types of events is frightening, frankly. And it gave me the opportunity to help people like I've always wanted to growing up.
So it seems like you have a more holistic view of these crises and incidents that occur, where a lot of times people just focus on the situation and then, oh, it's done. You see not just what happens before, during, but also after. And I think that after part is a part that a lot of people ignore.
Yeah, absolutely. Very commonly we get through an event, whether it's a power outage or, you know, whatever the event is. And after things have been restored, we're just very quickly wipe our hands and everything's back to normal, but it's not. People take time to adjust. There's a lot of activities that need to be approached in a nuanced way because of the disruption. You've got to reach out to, you know, many of your clients or your customers if you're in one of those industries where that type of thing is important.
Well, from your experience, what drives recovery when disruptions hit an organization?
You know, everybody would say plans. There are a lot of people, I think, would say plans. I'll try not to overgeneralize. And don't get me wrong, plans help, but I'm reminded of three quotes. No plan survives first contact with the enemy. Plans are nothing, but planning is everything. I mean, think about D-Day and the fact that it was supposed to occur on a different day. And my personal favorite, which comes from Mike Tyson himself, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the mouth.
Classic.
It is a classic. I think the point to take away from all these is you can't just develop a plan for someone and expect them to know it and use it. You have to make them a part of the process and help them understand why you are doing that planning in the first place. You have to connect with them before mentoring them and find commonalities that help them understand their role and the importance of that role during or following a disruptive event. So, you know, depending on the industry, regulations can sometimes drive the need for having resilience program. And moreover, financial services certainly being a big one here in the United States, it is fairly regulated. But what I've found in reality, most companies are reactionary and they have a hard time committing resources towards planning or mitigating a disruptive event until like that thing happens. So, you know, we're talking about power outages. You want to add a bigger UPS, that's an uninterrupted power supply, and a battery pack setup during an office renovation. You're likely going to hear, oh, why do we need that? That's too much money. You know, we haven't had extended power outages during the week, you know, in over 10 years. Why would we invest in that? And then the day of the power outage, you hear those same people making remarks like, we're going to need a bigger boat, more batteries, a bigger UPS, maybe a generator too. Kai, how much will that cost? We should probably look at that seriously now. So, you know, just you can't underestimate how reactionary many organizations and, you know, leadership are to these types of events.
It's unfortunate, but I think it does bring up a good point that if things do happen, either directly to your organization or you, or to someone else, maybe in your industry or someone relatable to your executives, you take note of that very quickly and then take advantage of the situation to then get them to invest for the future and the next time.
You're so right. The executives, they care about their peers, their competitors. I mean, the purpose of risk management is not to mitigate all risks. That would be rather expensive. But when they are able to see and put themselves in the shoes of an organization that has experienced one of those risks, you get more buy-in. It's easier to have those conversations and they see the importance of what you're proposing.
Can you share a moment where you saw the people around you really driving post-incident recovery?
The one that comes to mind is the 2012 Haiti earthquake. When I was working at the World Bank and, you know, damage throughout the island and really focusing in on Port-au-Prince and our operations there, I was coordinating with helicopter pilots from the DR to fly over to Port-au-Prince and try to get some of our people out of there or try to fly in supplies. I was working with DC-based search and rescue teams and NGOs to deliver badly needed supplies into those areas through those helicopter pilots, working with the UN and other government agencies, providing updates over the phone to the president of the World Bank at the time, Robert Zoellick, on the current conditions, actions, and needs to deal with that event. That was really one of the first times I was exposed to this idea of a CAN report, conditions, actions, needs. You know, that's become a really important part of any program that I was able to touch in consulting and now here at Dimensional. Those CAN reports can be used to help provide seamless updates and a common operating picture to all those involved in a response or recovery effort, you know, as effectively and efficiently as possible. When you have so many different stakeholders, cross-functional, inside your organization, public, private, having a reporting mechanism where people can quickly get up to speed and understand what's important, what the conditions are, what actions we've taken, and what needs we still have can really help manage that effectively.
You know, I'm curious, did that incident really deepen your commitment to this space?
Yeah, it did. And it still hits me today thinking back about it and sitting in that little watch office over a 36-hour period without sleep. I mean, people that work these events, people that manage these events, will often develop PTSD or like symptoms. I still have messages in my Facebook Messenger outbox from 3 different dead people that I was trying to reach in Haiti following the earthquake.
Oh, wow.
I remember some things from my childhood. I remember the value jet crash in the Florida Everglades in 96.
Right.
When I was growing up, things more recently, like the Pulse nightclub shooting and the damage that caused to those who helped respond and helped with the recovery effort. I mean, think about crime scene cleanup and a situation like Pulse nightclub. There were a number of individuals who walked away from that event physically okay and mentally scarred for life. And candidly, for years, I told myself I was fine dealing with these types of things on a day-to-day basis, that I was immune to the impacts that these things could cause. Really, up until earlier this year, I never realized the toll that it took on me personally. And I'm going through a mess of therapy right now to get back to, like, you know, a more balanced life free from some of that fear, you know, regret about maybe some of the actions I should have taken and so on. But that takes time to heal. And as the saying goes, you know, time takes time and the mean time is mean.
We look at the superheroes that fly in to save the day that, oh, they'll be fine. They saved the day. They don't worry about the stuff that mere mortals worry about. But that's not true. We are all mortals. We're human. And it's important to sit back, reflect, talk to people, discuss what you're thinking, and process those feelings, because you're going to have feelings. I mean, think about people coming back from vacation. It takes them like 3 days to adjust. Imagine how long it takes to adjust after a huge emergency.
Yeah, absolutely. And you hit me hard with that superheroes reference. I know we're just on the other side of Halloween here, a little bit removed, but I went as Iron Man and my four-year-old son went as Captain America. And what I've had to learn with him is that, you know, it's okay to connect with people. It's okay to be sincere. It's okay to talk about your feelings and to not be okay at times. And sharing that with somebody can be really, really helpful.
Well, earlier you were talking about how people are reluctant to spend time and money on training and resources they're going to need when an emergency happens. But then you went to list a whole bunch of bad things that happened and they keep happening. So with that in mind, how do you ensure that continuity training and communication methods are really effective so employees know what to do after a crisis?
The way we consume, or the way people consume information, has changed drastically over like the past 20 years and even broader, longer than that. The privacy we once had in our homes is now gone thanks to the pandemic and the discovery of effective work from home strategies. If you send someone a PowerPoint training presentation these days, chances are, you know, many of them may see it, but they may not read it or really truly absorb it. And the same can undoubtedly be said about an email. Newspapers are struggling. Cable networks are struggling to find and reach people in new ways. But at the same time, platforms like TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, even a little older, that have just exploded. If I want to learn how to change a lawnmower blade these days or replace a water filter in my refrigerator, no longer are we going to go to user manuals and paper documentation to read words. We're going to go search for videos on how to do it on something like YouTube. So likewise, if we really want to educate people on the realities of a disruption and what it can cause, and their roles in the response and recovery process, we need to connect with them in the way that they like to consume information if we want to be effective. So many are replacing their old PowerPoint decks with short, engaging instructional videos that are far better received than those traditional sources. And I've found success with that approach as well.
Do you think it's different across age groups? Like younger audiences prefer the short videos, but the older audiences prefer the manual?
Oh, absolutely. I had a partner from my time in consulting who would still regularly print out his calendar every single day and his notes and things like that. Huge whiteboard guy. And then I have others that are younger than me that can do crazy, amazing things with AI and really shorten the time and at the same time increase the value of what they're delivering utilizing technology. And there's somewhere in there is a happy medium. You know, in many ways, there's no substitute as well for walking the halls. Some of the old school water cooler kind of talk, getting out there and walking with the business so that when the thing happens, they understand who you are, what you do, and what you're all about.
Now, another thing that happens when incidents are occurring is it's crazy and people aren't in normal conditions. So emotions can really run high. How can teams best stay aligned and calm when those emotions are running high during or even after a disruption?
I would point to exercise, 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 exercise. When those emotions are high, if you want to build muscle memory for the right way to do things, it's not so different than if you're trying to put on physical muscle. And you have to be unafraid to fail. Think about going to a gym and lifting weights. If you want to add muscle, you don't just do cardio all day. You lift weights. And you don't just lift the same amount of weight. You gradually add on more weights and more reps to build that muscle. And when you reach that point of exhaustion or failure to lift that new weight, a spotter steps in. And that's the role of a facilitator during the exercise. You don't want your exercises to be designed to succeed. You want them to be designed against severe but plausible disruption scenarios so that you're adding real weight to the bars, to stress test your processes and your people so that you're prepared to work together efficiently, effectively, nicely. You want to do a fun exercise at your organization? Run through a scenario where there has been a nationwide teacher strike and or daycare worker strike. Is that severe? Yeah. Plausible? Yeah. And that will get the feelings going in the room. And you may see the kind of finger pointing and disagreement I'm talking about. But doing something like that in advance of the actual incident, We become more desensitized to the stress involved from the event. We are able to manage the stress better because it's a little more familiar. And that clears us up to think more rationally, more clearly, and work together in a more constructive and not destructive manner.
So it's kind of like exposure therapy.
Again, can't be afraid to fail. Failure is absolutely an option. We see it multiple times a week with some of these events. Think about the latest AWS outage. Think about the Azure outage that happened the week following. Failure is absolutely an option. And the more that people accept that, the more motivation you have to really work through those scenarios and want to find the right way to do it.
Yeah, just getting people exposed to that things can go wrong and it's okay. Like, we're all going to be stressed out. That's fine. This is not normal, but we'll find a way through it because we've practiced all these other scenarios. And you know what? Probably learn something from those and we can pull a little bit and we can apply that to this unique situation. It's super important to get that desensitization, I guess, to a certain extent. I was reading a book, it was earlier this year, and it was talking about some Civil War military leaders. And there was one, I cannot recall who it was exactly, but when he was a boy, his father used to fire a gun right near him to get him to not worry about the sound of a gun. And then throughout the war, he would be the guy that would just stand up as shells were exploding all around. He would just calmly look through the binoculars and see what was going on. And he was able to stay calm and manage through the situation while those around him were kind of freaking out. So that exposure can really make a big difference.
I love that. I'll give you another example, one that comes to my mind. I claim to be a golfer, but with three kids, don't get that much time to do it. But you know, my idol growing up was Tiger Woods. And many know of his late father, Earl Woods, and the impact that he had on him. But one thing Earl Woods used to do was when Tiger would take a backswing, Earl would have another club and he would throw it and whip it over his head.
Why?
So that he learned to be able, when Tiger was off balance or when he felt like he took it back too quickly or that something wasn't right, he was able to pause at the very top or wherever and then stop and then reset. Again, it gets back to exercise and the practice.
Absolutely. Well, you've been in this industry for a while now. So what are some common mistakes that you've seen organizations make during recovery?
Trying to recover too much. I mean, you know, ransomware is a huge topic these days, has been for years. Following a ransomware event, your immediate concern can't be the full recovery of your organization. You're going to fail and you're going to be disappointed. You've got to be able to prioritize what is most time critical, what will mitigate the most impact, and stay some of the other business processes, which are necessary, but may not be important right then and right there. To make that an easier task, you've got to set expectations for the recovery in advance of the event so that everyone has a common operating picture and we don't waste time disagreeing or arguing, trying to prioritize or deprioritize our assets and business processes when we're losing money and degrading our reputation or the trust with regulators and our customer base.
Have you noticed over your time in this industry that generally executives are more accepting of investing ahead of time, both time and resources, into recovery and continuity?
Yeah, I do. I think it's really unavoidable at this point in time with technology, with how interconnected we are. I mean, it's one thing if your organization experiences a ransomware event, but most large organizations have hundreds, if not thousands, of vendors. We're extremely interconnected these days. Those impacts can get passed on often. And you know, it relates back to something we said earlier about trying to influence those executives to take this seriously and really think about the risk. Emails can often be overlooked. We're inundated with Microsoft Teams message or Slack or things like that. Go walk the halls like we used to before hybrid workplaces and connect with people on a personal level. Learn what those executives, learn what motivates them. Learn about their experiences. Some of them may have lived in Louisiana during Hurricane Katrina and actually really care about what you're talking about, but you haven't connected with them. You've got to build those commonalities with the initiative you are trying to make them aware of or get support for. Otherwise, you're going to have an extremely difficult time producing a business case that's taken seriously.
So looking ahead, what risks are on your watch list?
You know, I'd go back to childcare. We don't pay teachers much. We don't pay daycare workers much. And that's really not a secret. Now, just imagine the business disruptions that would be caused by a statewide or nationwide strike. The world is ever changing. I mentioned how interconnected we are. And you're really not going to ever know what that next event is. You may have an idea of some of the scenarios that could happen, but there's so much nuance to a disruptive event or a crisis. So really, you know, thinking about all hazards, thinking about it holistically and all the different parties that need to be involved and all the different impacts it has, brand, reputation, you know, regulatory, operational, financial, the impact on people. Watching out for some of those risks is, you know, you're not going to make mistakes if you're looking at all the potential bad things that could happen.
What keeps you motivated to continue doing this work year after year? I know it can be emotionally draining.
Simple. It's helping people. There's a great quote my mom taught me growing up, and you probably know it too. That quote came from Mr. Rogers, who said, "When the news is scary, look for the helpers." I grew up really interested in tornadoes. Growing up in Austin, Texas, the Gerald tornado, the F5 that came through in the Central Texas outbreak in the mid to late 90s, active shooters, active assailants, as we now call them, in educational environments, events like Columbine. I remember when that happened and it had a huge impact on me. I think about the parents of those children often, but there are many flavors of disasters, disruptions, and crisis events. And, you know, the people involved always need help. It never gets old. And each year I learn new things, new ways to effectively manage these events and help people. It's a never-ending story, and it's a good one.
Well, Kai, thank you so much for being on the show. I thought it was a fantastic episode.
Thank you, Peter. Please take care of yourself. Remember, everyone, take care of your response and your recovery personnel. Asking for help is absolutely not a weakness.
To learn more about Kai and his work with Dimensional Fund Advisors, click the links in the episode description. You can also watch video highlights from this episode on Alert Media's YouTube. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review the show wherever you get your podcasts. Stay safe out there.
Thank you for listening to the Employee Safety Podcast from Alert Media, the industry's most intuitive emergency communication and threat intelligence solution. To learn more about how to protect your people and business during critical events, visit alertmedia.com. Until next time.